This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Prepared speech?
No, I don't, actually. I do have documents in case I need to refer to them. Because it is a complicated thing, as you can see. So anybody have any questions or anything of that nature? I will say, just before, talking about it, that, for me, and, I'm a fan of movies, and I'm a fan, of course, of behind-the-scenes footage and sort of how movies are made. So clearly, I'm interested in that sort of thing. And I think that the evolution of this kind of material where the behind-the-scenes footage becomes... It's intuitive to the experience of watching the movie. You've seen the movie. You kind of know what it's about. And then when you're looking for something else and maybe something... And it's not a revolution that there's making of, material on the DVD, I think, or Blu-ray. I think the revolution is that it is helping the process of finding that material when you want to see it. It's one thing to go, oh, that was a cool movie. I'm going to go hunt through the special features to find that one part that I thought was interesting. But it's another thing entirely when it's just there or just happening or I'm pointing it out to you. This is a thing you should notice because it's cool. Or I think it's cool. So I think that... And when the guys were talking about that this director walk-ons, and by the way, it's really embarrassing to see. I'm a dork. But other than that, it also wasn't easy to do because, it's green screen and I have to, I could see the movie playing sort of out of the corner of my eye. And so that part was really a challenge for me just because I'm not an actor. But by the way, it's just what I talk about every day, so it wasn't really... It was just the stuff that I know. So I think in that sense, it was intuitive to talk about the movie, just like I would talk to, say, the crew when I was explaining what I wanted to do with the scene. So in a lot of ways, really what you're getting, I think, with the DVD is sort of an inside... Or the Blu-ray, again, is an inside sort of view of how the movie was made, in the sense that that's kind of how I am with everyone while we're making the movie. So it's kind of cool, I think, in that sense. I mean, if you're interested in sort of how ideas are communicated when you make a movie, I think a lot of that is kind of what the director walk-on becomes.
If given the opportunity, is this something that you'd want to do on future projects? It sounds like there's a lot of work.
I think it is. It really... I think I could do... I think I'm... you could... Depending, as people get used to this way of watching a movie, it's kind of like me and you're being in your living room going like, hey, and then look at this part. Let's stop it and watch it again. So there is that part's cool. I mean, if you're director-centric, that's a fun experience maybe. Yeah, I had a good time with it. And actually, when I watch it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's cool. That's right, that was cool. So, I mean, it's almost like a visual diary, too, of kind of how I... experience the movie.
This was always going to be a movie that looks great on Blu-ray. What scenes are your favorites to see? What do you think looks best?
I mean, I think that the transfer, I think, was really we were really careful with it. And what was cool is that now the it used to be when you did a DI for cinema, you really had to redo that for DVD. You had to change the look a little bit just because it didn't... The language, those two technologies didn't talk to each other very well. Now, the technology is to the point where basically the same settings that we do for the DI for the print go across right onto the DVD just with minor tweaks, and we just kind of watch it be careful. So it's really... When I'm sitting in the... doing the DI at Company 3... And I'm actually looking at, okay, this is the look of the movie. In a lot of ways, this experience is the closest to that. That you when you go to the theater, every theater has a different, light levels in the projector and blah, 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 on forever. Just the way... So this, for me, when I watch it, I guess, to be specific, is difficult. But I can say that it's really closest to when I'm actually saying, okay, this is what I want the movie to look like, you know, and it kind of, that's what, you know, it, that's the experience for me. So I guess it's everything.
So it's,
it's cop
so
out, but
in a way, the theatrical release was kind of a trailer for this, which is your ideal release of the film.
It is in some ways. It is. And I sort of equate it to like the way you would talk about, I mean, it's not exactly the same because, it's almost the reverse of a paperback, hardback version, you know, like this is more like, it used to be that the cinematic version was the hardback, and then when you went and bought a DVD, it was the paperback version of the movie, right? Now I think that those things are kind of getting turned on their ear in the sense that now the deluxe version of the movie is the Blu-ray, and the theatrical version is, you know, in some ways the paperback, because it's this is a lot more custom, you know, it's a custom experience, and I think, but on a massive level. So I don't know. I think that filmmaker has time now when they do the, I mean, especially this version, which is, you know, a much longer cut, and it's just everything, not through, you know, the kitchen sink. I mean, it's not the Black Freighter, I think, comes out of Christmas, is even like more crazy. But this was the cut that I sort of originally had settled on, and then we needed to get it a little bit shorter just to make it practical. And I really think that Blu-ray does give this amazing opportunity to filmmakers that, you know, I remember, like, you know, they started releasing director's cuts of movies on Blu-ray and DVD. I thought, gosh, I wonder if people will just, you know, if filmmakers will just, you know, do whatever, you know, the studio wants, so they can, and because they know they have their director's cut. But I don't think it's really evolved that way as much as it could. But I think now, with what's possible on Blu-ray, you're going to see a much more sort of diverse movie experience, because you're going to, like, okay, I saw that in the theater, but I loved it. Now when I buy the Blu-ray, like, what else? You know, people are a little bit like, what? Okay, what else can you do? And it just so happens that a movie like Watchmen is kind of perfect for that thing, because it's not like, you know, I was saying, you know, it's not like we made a movie where we just shot on location and, you know, we were we're going to be, you know, at this guy's house and then these people's, this alley in downtown LA or wherever. I mean, we made a movie where, you know, if I want, I can basically, like, at any frame, stop it and go, like, oh, yeah, we made that, we built that, this was the thing we researched, this was a, you know, there's no, every aspect of the movie is designy, so it really lends itself to this kind of format.
Just in talking about some of the content that we saw on this, what inspired you to have Hollis go out a little bit like Jake LaMotta with the original?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, again, you know, it was so deep in this, you know, we were so deep into this kind of, what do you call it, you know, pop culture metaphor kind of, you know, the Jake LaMotta reference, I think, just came up. We put the music on and it kind of like worked for me. It has that sort of melancholy, sort of nostalgic feeling about it, but it's kind of sad at the same time. You know, it's like the whole idea of that sequence for me is that, like, you know, he's an old man and he's just getting the crap beat out of him. That, you know, he's delusional and he's deluded. You know, like the glory days are right, still fresh in his mind. You know, he, you know, having written a book and sort of lived it. I mean, even though he's retired, I think that's kind of the thing that we were playing with a little bit with it. But it was, you know, it's a classic piece of music. It's not a, so it's fun. I love the little sequence. So it's kind of fun. But also, you know, that whole thing of the, there's a brutality to it too. At the same time, there's all that kind of whimsical kind of what feels, you know, kind of light and whimsical and dreamy, and then it, in reality, it's pretty, you know, he's just getting his brains bashed in by a statue, you know. So I think that's the kind of the movie kind of does that, you know, throughout.
Well, it's a heartbreaking scene, though, and it's like one of those things that, you know, critics who weren't familiar with the comic books, that one of those scenes where you're like, God, if that would have been in there, that might have helped with their reaction to that.
It might have, but, you know, again, it's like, how would those same guys have been, you know, after 3 hours of sitting in the movie theater, you know? Like, maybe, fine, maybe they'd be like, yeah, that's awesome. But, you know, I felt like, you know, it's funny, I was on an interview today, and we were talking about, you know, just the... I've been really pleased with the reaction to the movie. I mean, I even though it was polarizing for a lot of people, I feel like for the people that, for the people that enjoy the movie, and also for people that sort of, that the movie, in a lot of ways, the audience that was ready for the movie and wanted it, you know, they reacted to the movie in exactly the way that I was hoping they would, you know. All the reference, you know, every little thing I felt like was brought up to me as, like, oh yeah, I saw that when you did that. And that's the kind of stuff for me that is completely satisfying and cool. And also I'm happy that I can sort of, you know, that we could go all the way with it, you know, and do something like this that's... And, you know, and we are... You know, this cut is being released in theaters on that weekend. On Comic-Con weekend, is that the weekend that's going out?
The weekend before.
Mm-hmm. So in a theater in L.A., a theater in New York, in Minneapolis, and then in Texas?
Right? Dallas.
In Dallas. So that weekend, you'll be able to see this cut in theaters. So so it'll be interesting at Comic-Con when, like, there's people lined up to ask me questions and... Feel like I can say, did you see the director cut in theaters? Because you feel like that. I feel like that's a prerequisite, isn't it?
The fact that the Hollis scene is an action scene, they would let you cut that. And weren't they clinging to all the action they could in the theatrical?
Doesn't really work that way.
No.
I like your thinking, no. It's more about like...
Doesn't it have to do with the IMAX and like the fact that it was too big?
It had a lot to do with IMAX. There's no way the movie... We could have probably gotten a longer cut, but it wouldn't have... Literally, and I've talked about this, but the theatrical version of Watchmen was so... I mean, it was so close to the edge of the IMAX that they would say that if the booth where the film was stored was humid, in that little space that the humidity creates, the film wouldn't fit on the roll because it was just like that little micro millimeter of moisture would actually throw the film, unspool it because it would just fall off. So,
did that ever happen in one theater?
I don't think it happened. That was the thing that was told to me. But, you know, it's the kind of thing like where, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, like I'm proud of the theatrical version of the movie. I think it does everything I wanted it to do. I mean, is this crazy Hollis Mason and like there's another scene on Mars and there's and the resulting scene that happens after this is, you know, when we're at the bar and Dan sees that Hollis has been killed on TV and beats that knot top up and busts his teeth out, and there's that whole other sequence that is a result of this, which is super violent and you know, it was, you know, so there's little things like that. I mean, there's like a chain reaction that happens when you have a scene like that in the movie, that the other scenes get affected by it. So it wasn't just that scene. When I took that scene out, it actually trimmed up, you know, tightened up the whole section of the movie. But and even just the scene afterward, after this scene with Dan and Rorschach in the owl ship, that scene's twice as long as it is in the movie because it's like this big one take that goes where they're yelling at each other.
How much of the design of this was in place before the movie was released theatrically? I mean, like, the design of the Blu-ray was, like, in terms of what you were going to talk about?
We were close, right? We had a lot of stuff. Trying to think what day we shot that stuff.
I think it was
about a month in advance, wasn't it?
Yeah, about
About right before the movie came out.
Yeah.
Well, was there anything that, because of the theatrical release or the critical or commercial reaction, that you guys included, whether it was a reaction to the film artistically or just something that people seemed to be interested in, that you were like, oh, we should go back and explore this a little
bit? You know, I don't think so. Because I feel like, I mean, I don't think so. I feel like we kind of, the spectacular parts of the movie were clear about where those were. I don't think we, other than to open up the sort of, like the squid controversy was a thing I think that, you know, we kind of went and addressed, because that was out there before the movie came out. So I think that was part of the, that was kind of that whole thing, squid controversy, if there's such a thing. I like that you can use the word controversy. I don't get to use that very often.
Oh, I was also hoping you could, it sounds like you're going to be part of a live community screening at Comic-Con.
Yes.
And I just, well, one, when is it? And then, and why did you want to be involved in something like that?
Well, you know, it's a thing that has been done, you know, that whole sort of taking questions as the movie rolls and talk about little bits of it. And I feel like, especially at Comic-Con, you know, the movie is so custom, you know, in a lot of ways. I think the movie has broad appeal, and I think that this Blu-ray experience for anyone who loves movies is pretty insane. And then in particular, you know, at Comic-Con, it's not just comic book fanatics, it's cinephiles as well, you know, and I think that kind of combination just made me say, yeah, it'd be cool to just sort of discuss what people were thinking about each scene as it goes by and questions they had or things they wanted to talk about. I just think that's fun. With such a giant community, it's crazy. Maybe you suck!
For the whole community, once that community happens, is that saved to be accessed for future viewings?
Yeah.
And when is that? July 25th.
Okay. And how does the... is that what you were asking about the comments? Like, if they do their own commentary, can I sync up with that and watch my movie with Joe afterwards? Joe Blow doing their commentary?
Anytime.
You can. That's
awesome. I don't know why they did this. or do I?
Right. As well as people at home.
The disc is also enabled with the ability for friends or groups to gather and do it whenever they want.
Oh, that's cool.
If anybody ever wanted to gather midnight. Their buddies who also have a Blu-ray.
3 in the morning. Midnight on the West Coast.
Live events, a certain start time, it's very exciting. People participate. There's an immediacy to it that's fun. And then it's archived, so anybody can go through it later if they can't be there for the night.
It looks like a lot of work went into just this DVD release. Where are you at the same time with Sucker Punch and Guardians of the Galaxy?
I am knee deep in both of those incredible motion pictures. The Guardians, we've been in animation. Basically, the way, I don't know if you're familiar with the process, but you know, you do you record the voices, then you basically like draw the storyboards, and then you start to animate the movie after you actually screen versions of the movie. You can actually watch the movie before you animate, so you kind of know what the movie is, you know. It's, that way you're not just animating and then going, yeah, no, I don't like that, that's dumb, do it again, that's expensive. So we're in the process right now of just honing our cut down. We basically have a movie, we have a bunch of it. It's already in the production pipeline, and we're really starting now with Guardians to get a sense of what the movie's going to look like, and it is literally, it's a mind-boggling thing, I think. And I've seen a lot of shit, and I think it looks pretty freaking cool. Because it's not, you know, the thing about Guardians that's really interesting to me is, look, it's an adventure film, for one. It's like, tonally, it's probably more like Harry Potter than it is like Shrek, you know? It's more of a, not a comedy, you know, but it is a big adventure, and it's mythic. It is PG, which is cool that I was able to do that. it's pretty proud of that. So far, of course, I haven't, you know, we'll see the unrated director's cut and see. No, I'm just kidding. It's animation. They won't let me do that. the thing that's cool is that, a lot of these animated films, you know, each studio kind of has their sort of signature look, Pixar or whatever it is, you know, it's kind of, everyone does their own thing. And the thing that's cool is that we, without trying, you know, we just really didn't go like, oh, what do they do? Let's not do that. What do they? We just said, what kind of movie do we want to make? What kind of movie would I want to see? And how would that look? And we've ended up on this, with this movie that just feels, you know, it's not, it's photo real, but it's stylized, and it, you know, it's not the owls look awesome. It's really difficult to explain. When you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about. But it's its own thing, 100% its own thing, and that's what I'm most excited about. That when you see it, it really is kind of, you know, because they're acting and talking, but they're owls. It's really strange and cool. And so that's kind of what's happening with that, and it's really been challenging and fun and interesting. And then Sucker Punch is, we are, you know, 100% in pre-production. I'm drawing like a maniac and looking at art every day and awesome paintings of craziness. And the girls are training, and... you know, we're just basically full-blown getting it ready. I think we go to Canada in the beginning of July, and then we'll be up there till end of January. Again, Vancouver. So, yeah, that's just happening, and it's cool.
If I can add, Zach and Debbie and their whole team are incredibly gracious with their time, so we've had a chance to talk with them, hear their plans. Eric is... on set, and so the process for the Blu-ray has begun, just formulating ideas and already.
Yeah.
Pre-production.
Yeah.
Yes,
absolutely.
Because we've been, for instance, we do in the fantasy sequences. You know, we've already been shooting stuff. You know, because we're down at ASAMP 11, going through, you know, meticulously planning these like insane fights and fantasy sequences. You know, and we've been sort of documenting that and starting to do like test shots and get a sense of what the movie is going to sort of feel like and look like. So,
how violent are you going to get with this one?
Yeah. You know, the fun thing for me, the fun thing for me is that, you know, we've, you know, after Watchmen, which was a very, you know, it's like a, It's a book that I love. It's a piece of material that, like, you know, it's like making a movie about the Bible. You have to be really, like, you know, true to the text and stuff like that, and sort of the ideas. And it's fun to be working on a movie that I wrote that no one knows what the fuck it's about, and I can change it whenever I want, and I can be like, I don't care, it's cooler that way. Make the guns bigger. Make the, like, you know, so that's really fun, and it's really liberating. And, you know, when I started talking about making this movie, you know, it's a complicated movie, and it has tons of ideas in it and all that, but it's an action movie. That's why I wanted to make it. I really wanted to make an action movie. I always felt like people were like, oh, you made 300, that's an action movie. I'm like, nah, it is, yes, it's got action in it. But I wanted to make a movie that's smart, but, like, for anyone who, it allows people to enjoy an action film without feeling like, you know, someone had to hit them with a stupid stick to, like, get in the theater. You know, I hope, you know, that's what I hope for. Because I really wanted to just... You know, Damon and I, who's my stunt coordinator and fight choreographer, he and I have been really wanting, jonesing to do some real action, and that we can just design with no rules, and you know, all the guns and all the knives and anything we want and endless amount of enemies and just really get stupid. And it's been, that part's been really fun, you know, and just any world you can think of, and you know, and so it's a really exciting to be, you know, working on something that's like that. That it's just, there's no rules, you know.
Stylistically, are there any, like, you know, pre-existing works that you could point to and say you're kind of drawing from that, or is this...
Yeah, it's hard. It's a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, it's a lot of stuff. It's part Wizard of Oz, part Brazil, part all that jazz, part. So, anyway, it's a good time.
Okay, are we ready to start 300?
Sure. Okay. Prepare for glory.
Anybody want to refresh your drink as we're putting in the disc? Yeah. No, we'll jump right into it.